This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I was going to look up just before I started this to see for sure, but I think this is episode 450. I think. As I'm talking here and driving, I will try to look it up at the same time. Sure, why not? Great. Let's see, Phil Farron. Why is it not coming up? I've been out to this website before, a couple of times. Anyways, so if it is, ta-da, it's episode 450. Let's see, there we go, podcast. Windfall podcast. And podcast. Oh, and the podcast is located here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yes, it is. It's 450. So there you go. I don't know what kind of a milestone that is, but it's a nice round number. And there is more to come. The goal is 2,000. I turned 59 this week. Well, first of all, writing seems to be puttering along, so that's good. I'm up around chapter 13 or 14 on book 8. I'm getting some input back on book 7. I knew I was kind of pushing the line on book 7, but, you know, that's okay. Because my philosophy is, when it comes to talking about gender relationships and all those types of things, if we were doing a bang-up job of educating our people in the church about gender relations, if we were paragons of moral virtue within the church, then I would think that what we're doing is working great. But in fact, our babies are having babies. Our young people are shacking up. Our older couples are getting divorced. We've got ministers, missionaries falling to pornography. We've got older women in relationships going out and having affairs, just like husbands and wives. Everybody's having affairs. You know, there's a problem. There's a problem in our conceptualization. There's a problem in our understanding. And, you know, we've got to talk about this stuff. Or we can just keep doing what we're doing and just keep watching lives being destroyed by things that don't need to destroy our lives. So, I tackled quite a few of these topics in book 7, knowing that I was pushing the line a little bit, but assuring myself that it was earthy, not purient. I was talking to one of my beta readers, and he said, I have to tell you, I got to the end of such and such a chapter, and if this had happened, I would have just put down the book and stopped reading. But he said, I was really glad that didn't happen. I said, right, because this isn't to be purient. This is simply to say, this is a problem, and how are you going to handle this? How are you going to handle the temptations? How are you going to prepare yourself to be able to stand on that day? Because book 7 is about the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, and it's all about preparation. When the moment comes, there is often not time to prepare. And if you don't do preparation ahead of time, when the moment comes, you will not be prepared and you will not be successful. He did say that he was talking to another one of my beta readers who happens to be a woman, and she was a little not so thrilled with the book. I had used some anatomically correct language that she thought I didn't need to use. But, you know, again, it's just anatomy. And I think we need to get over our squeamishness about some of these topics and look at it for what it is. Understand that the genders have different approaches to these things. And figure out how to live within that difference. And it's not only the differences between the genders, it's the differences in phases of life. Because if you understand that a lot of this stuff that we classify in all sorts of erotic and mysterious ways is really nothing more than the engines of reproduction that are built within us for the survival of the species, if you understand that and begin to look at that and begin to decipher how that impacts us on a day-to-day basis, then frankly it all just gets a bit silly. It's a bit silly to expect that our lives are going to be the same age to age. It's silly to expect that men and women will approach these energies in the same way. Because they have two completely different relationships to their engines of reproduction. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this all works out. It will just be fascinating to see. But, however it works out, I'm moving on to book 8. And I'm on chapter 13, as I said. Seems to be going fine. I'm going to lose a little time this week because the children's musical is this week. So I'm going to lose a chunk of Saturday in rehearsal. And then I am running sound on Sunday morning for the service, as well as running for the children's musical. So, I mean, Sunday is blown. It's just completely blown. And that's usually my big day of the week. That's the 3,000 word day. So that's going to be a little rough. But I have been banking words. I've been banking words for the last, this will be wrapping up week 6, I think, that I've been on this sprint. And I'm about ready to crest 10,000 words, and it's only Thursday. In fact, when I get home, I'll do some more writing. So I intend to crest those 60,000 words today, and then I will have all day tomorrow, and I will have at least part of the day on Saturday. And hopefully between those 2 days, you know, I can get the rest of the week finished up. And if I can do that, I'm actually about 3,500 words ahead, so ta-da! You know, as long as I'm to 80,000 words by the end of week 8 of the sprint, I'm good. And I think I'm going to be good. I've been doing this new thing with fasting where I'm trying to just keep my hours of consumption, my hours of eating, to 5 hours a day. And I'm choosing to do that in the evenings. Don't always hit it every day because I do have breakfasts with friends, and so that kind of throws the schedule off. But where I can, I've been doing it. So, for instance, this week I had a breakfast on Monday, so had a bowl of oatmeal in the morning, but then I waited till I got home at night to eat, and then on Tuesday I just had coffee and tea during the day and waited to eat till 5 o'clock at night, and then on Wednesday, of course, I fasted all day, and then today I fasted all day until 5 o'clock, and then I got something to eat. I don't know if it's because I know what's coming, that I'm not actually going to be able to eat until Thursday night, and so that kind of makes it harder for me Wednesday night. I don't know. I am chewing a little bit of gum on Wednesday night when I'm writing just to give me just a little. It's sugar-free gum, but it still gives me a little buzz. But I really hadn't found anything extensive that I wanted to dedicate an entire podcast to. There were a couple of interesting things that I may do some follow-up on. I watched a couple of talks by a lady, I don't know her name, but she's one of the founders of Bit Nation, which is using the blockchain technology that underlies Bitcoin and Ethereum to allow people to create their own governmental structures so that they can be citizens of the world. And then they can make their own laws. And any disputes, they are just going to have arbitration. And you can buy into their currency, and that's the currency that will be used for all the arbitration, and et cetera, et cetera. I listen to some of these things and go, okay, I am more than willing to say I am an old fuddy-duddy. But I just don't quite understand how the blockchain is going to help you form your own government. I understand how it can form ownership and maybe contracts and that kind of stuff, but I don't understand how the blockchain can help you enforce laws. Because at the end of the day, unfortunately, humans, bless their little pink souls. Oh, there's another package in there. Humans, sometimes the only thing they understand is guns. And getting arrested, and getting taken to jail, and getting thrown in a hole. And that kind of thing. And I just wonder, there's a certain contingent of the population that I don't think is going to be copacetic to just sitting around in arbitration, and I'm wondering how that's going to play out. But I'm willing to just say, hey, let's see how this works out. So, Bit Nation, that was pretty interesting. I didn't feel like it was really interesting enough to do a podcast on it because it seemed a bit ideological, but who knows? In 5 years, I may be doing a podcast on it. I almost became a citizen of the world, which you can do for free. I'm backing into my garage. Which you can do for free on, I think it's bitnation.org. And I'm going to keep watching videos and things on it, see if I can find somebody who can explain it to me in a way that, I can go, wow, that's right, that's amazing. Because I ain't there yet. But I'm not saying I won't be there someday. So that was pretty interesting. The other thing that I've been watching, and I'm freely ready to admit that maybe this was fascinating to me this week, because last Sunday I turned 59 on the 5th of March. Guy Fawkes Day. Remember the 5th of September. I just love that my birthday is on Guy Fawkes Day. I just love that. It could be that since I'm turning 59, I have turned 59, and I'm heading towards 60, that maybe I found this interesting. But I've been sort of following this whole life extension thing. I ran across a bunch of TED Talks by David Sinclair, who has been investigating aging. And his claim now is that aging is not the result of mistakes in DNA, but it is the result of chemical accumulations on the epigenetics of our DNA so that our bodies cannot read them as well. That's a whole different thing, because if that's what it is, then the question is, can we invent something that will clean off those chemicals and restore us to a more youthful state? And in fact, the body already has a mechanism to do that. It just doesn't work quite as well. So his thing is, the body already has a mechanism to do this. How can we encourage the body to do this more? One of the things that I found fascinating is that he claims that across the board, it has been known for a long time that there is one simple strategy to wake up the body's immune system, to wake up the body's self-healing capabilities. One simple strategy, and that's fasting. He said, intermittent fasting, reduced caloric intake across the board helps living organisms live longer and healthier. He said, everything from yeast to mice to, you know, you can get, I think the bump is 15 to 30% longer lives, healthier lives, just by restricting your caloric intake, just by fasting. So that's pretty interesting. Kind of went along with my all, oh, I guess I'll keep doing this 5-hour fasting thing just to see how it feels. But he freely admitted that was not the easiest strategy, and in typical scientist way, his goal then is to create some compound that mimics this so that you don't actually have to put in the work. You can just pop a pill and ta-da, you know, you feel younger, you look younger, ta-da. And that, you know, that's fine. That's a perfectly, you know, wonderful thing to go after. He says that when you evoke these responses in the body, it's not that you don't die eventually. You do. You live longer and you do die eventually. But when you die, it's much more sudden. The decline is much more sudden. So you have longer, healthier lives, and then there's a very quick drop right there at the end, and then you die of whatever you're going to die of. Okay, well, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. And one of the things that they've talked about is highly important is a substance called NAD, NAD. It's some big nitrate something or other. NAD. And he said that NAD powers everything in your body. It's a molecule that your body has to have in order to utilize energy, et cetera, et cetera. But when you get to be over 50, you know, you're in this steady decline of this NAD, and you end up to where you only have about half what you had as a young person. And so he sees that this powering down is part of the problem with aging, because then those systems that are meant to keep your DNA cleaned of chemicals on et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, aren't working as well. So his solution, which is very interesting, his solution, is another one out there, but his solution is a molecule called NMN. N is in Nancy, M is in Mary, N is in Nancy, NMN. And they're producing this. They said it's a natural chemical that's produced in the body. The presence of it is a precursor that leads to production, higher production of NAD. He said they've had some clinical trials, very encouraging. If you want to listen to this stuff, just go to YouTube and put in David Sinclair, SINCLAIR, NMN. And you'll find a bunch of different YouTube videos out there about it. It's very interesting. It sounds very promising. They've actually demonstrated that mice that they give this to, their muscles work better. They are healthier. They've shown that mice that this is given to that eat a healthy diet, it doesn't really affect them that much. But then they have the standard mouse on the standard American diet, which they call SAD, S-A-D, standard American diet. But then they have another mouse that's on the standard American diet, but then they also feed it this molecule. And while on the outside, this mouse doesn't look any different than its friend who is also eating the standard American diet, the mouse that gets these compounds, when the mouse dies and they do an autopsy, the organs are good. There's not a lot of fatty tissue in the organs. Everything looks just like the healthy mouse that watched what they ate it and did calorie restrictions. So, of course, I'm sure that would be great joy to many people that they could eat what they want and just pop this pill and it would protect them. So it's It's all going to be very interesting. The other thing I was watching this week is the advance of robotics. That's a fascinating area. The advance of nanotechnology. That's a fascinating area. The advance of DNA engineering and the fact that Craig Venter's group has created the first completely digital bacteria. It's, you know, first designed from the ground up with its DNA printed out and then put in living cells and takes over. And now you have this bacteria that was designed from the ground up by scientists. It's an interesting world. It's just a really, really interesting world. And everybody seems to agree that this next 10 to 15 to 20 years is going to be very, very interesting. And I'm looking forward to it a lot. I did see a news article today about one of the first autonomous shuttles that was deployed in some city. I should have paid more attention, but it was for taking people back and forth from airport parking, I think, to the airport. And it was this little blue shuttle thing, didn't have any driver in it. And so people would just get it on and it would drive it around. Well, it had an accident. It was driving down a little street and this truck apparently started pulling out. And so it slowed down and stopped and it just sat there and the truck just backed right into it because apparently this thing doesn't have anything to go in reverse. That seems like an oversight. And apparently it doesn't have a horn that it can go beep, 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 beep. So I suspect there will be some enhancements to some of these driverless cars to make them more defensible. But it really is going to be an interesting world. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.